B, our Bridge to Shore Home Group member with over 40 years in sobriety. Thanks for joining us, Denny.
Afternoon, everybody. I'm Dennis, and I'm an alcoholic. You know, usually when you're part of a three-panel thing, and you're the last speaker, you kind of wonder, are you going to have to clean up a mess? Or are you going to be in a position, which I'm really fortunate to be in today, and where I could sit down right now, and you would have more than gotten your money's worth and what you've had so far. So anything I have to offer is kind of icing on the cake, if you will. And it's really interesting, as I listen to Mitch's sharing and I listen to Kristen's sharing, there's a lot of commonality in our experiences. So hopefully you'll be able to find that as I share with my experience. So the question we were posed was, what is spirituality? And the way I define that today, and that's kind of a moving target in a sense. It changes based on my understanding as I go through sobriety. But my understanding today is spirituality is really item C in how it works. Seeking God, which is pretty simple. The problem comes in, we're dealing with drunks who like to think. And so we take a word and we blow it out of proportion and we argue about it. And we analyze it, and we do all kinds of things with it just to avoid dealing with it. God's one of those words. And so I want to comment on that. The idea of God, for me, is really just an idea. What that idea of spirituality and what the how it works says to me is, I need to find a way to come to understand how to live my life in a progressive, growing, positive way. How I do that is really kind of up to me. And what that looks like is based on my experience and my understanding and my open-mindedness. I think it's kind of sad, really. Some places in AA today, it seems like people want to lock down the idea of what God is. Kristen kind of mentioned that with some folks she dealt with. And it's unfortunate because that's not how AA began. Bill talks about there were really two groups when they wrote the big book. One was the folks who were really religious, and then there were the folks who were the psychological folks. And, you know, those are really general camps that he put them in. But if you do the study of the history of AA and you understand and you read about how they lived their lives, what you'll discover is that they all tried multitudes of ways to improve their spiritual condition. They did all kinds of stuff, and stuff that people might think was weird. Bill and Bob had seances in their homes. Now, imagine going to your home group and saying, listen, I think we ought to have a seance tomorrow night. You know, we don't excommunicate anybody, but you'd come pretty close. But that's the background of what we're a part of. And they were adamant about everybody doing what they needed to do to improve their spiritual understanding and their spiritual condition. Because it was life and death, and they knew it. And so that's kind of what I've come to in my own search. A couple things that are important. Mitch talked about defining things, and I'm a big believer in that as well. For me, there's a difference between belief and faith. I can believe anything, and it's simply an intellectual exercise. It might make me feel good, might get a warm fuzzy out of it, but it's essentially an intellectual exercise. When I act on that, that's faith. And for me, that's what spirituality is about, is changing a belief to a faith, changing an understanding to a set of actions. It's kind of like gratitude. You know, we all go to gratitude meetings. There's a difference between appreciation and gratitude. Appreciation is the same kind of thing. I might appreciate my sobriety. I might appreciate all the things, wonderful things that have happened to me. But it's when I begin to take action to carry that message and that opportunity to somebody else that it turns into gratitude. And so those kinds of things are things I think about when I think about spirituality. I come from a long line of clergy. My wife studied biblical archaeology in college. So when I came into AA, I saw the word God up there, and I thought, it's a no-brainer. I got this one covered. And then I began to watch what happens in AA, and I began to listen to what people experience in AA, and I realized the religion I grew up with and the intellectual experience of that was different from the experience that I was seeing in the AA meetings. And so I had to, you know, it's kind of weird, but I had all this religious background. I had to start from scratch with this whole idea of a higher power. And so I borrowed a concept from the Bible, the story of Babel, where people were building this tall tower to reach God. God decided he didn't want that to happen, so he kicked them out, and he gave them all different languages so they couldn't talk to each other. And so I took a cue from that story for my spiritual search, and I decided that all the religions in the world, each were given a secret, and they didn't know what each other's secret was. And I was going to read about them and study them until I found them. Until I found all those secrets, and then I'd have it. The only thing worse than an intellectual in Alcoholics Anonymous is somebody who thinks they are. I suffer from that. You can talk to anybody who's known me in AA, and they'll verify that. So I went on this search, and you know, it was a good experience. I was taking some actions. I was doing something, thinking about something other than myself. I was trying to learn. I was becoming open-minded. So it was a good experience. But about a year into it, I was on Buddhism at the time. It struck me that all of these things that I was discovering were available to me in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I thought, you know, I could be much more efficient here. And so I'll just study Alcoholics Anonymous and its program, and then I don't have to worry about all that other stuff. And again, that was a good transition. There's you hear a lot in meetings about having a spiritual experience, because Bill, of course, had one that started all this out. If you do the studying, you'll find out that those most susceptible to a spiritual experience are those who are closest to permanent insanity. That's what it takes. That's where the dividing line is. I had a spiritual experience because I literally was that close to insanity. I was just literally going under my mind. I was about a year sober, driving truck, going down the road, just literally coming unglued, and I had the spiritual experience. And it does change you, but its purpose is to get your attention. That's what I discovered. It's kind of like if you have a mule, you know, they're good burden animals. They'll do a lot of great things. You can train them to do all kinds of stuff. But every once in a while, just like the alcoholic, they get an idea in their head. And you can't move them. They just become immobilized. And the only way you can get them moving forward is to whack them between the eyes with a 2x4 or something like that. And it kind of shocks them into consciousness again. And then they move forward. And that's what my spiritual experience did for me. So I'm off and running on this spiritual search, and it was great. My spiritual search has been an ongoing thing, but that segment of my spiritual life lasted about 20 years. And I really got a full experience of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was deeply involved. I'm fortunate to become the delegate for Senate Minnesota, did the bid for the 2000 International Convention, and was able to bring that here and did things like that and had some really amazing Alcoholics Anonymous experiences. And I tell you that because at that point in my sobriety, I didn't realize it, but it's very easy for us to have a spiritual disease grow in us even when we were practicing spirituality in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's what happened to me. My pride was growing. I didn't see the things that I was fortunate to participate in as gifts so much as I saw them as actions of mine. That was the disease. And so at about 20 years of sobriety, I had a recruiter come offer me a job in Iowa. Sounded like a really big deal, and I was going to be a really big deal, and so I went to Iowa for a year and realized, A, I wasn't a big deal, and that was the wrong thing for me to do because it was solely a decision based on self. It was solely a decision based on ego. Now, little side note on that. What was going to happen to me would have happened to me anyway. Now, there are several moments in my life, and I'm sure they've happened to you, where you think, you know what, if I would just have made that decision instead of this one, my life would have been entirely different, right? Okay, let me share an experience with you. I've thought that many times. And so I went back as far as I could, and I found that key moment in my life. It was a moment when I went to another town in North Dakota. I grew up in a little town in North Dakota. Went to another town to go on a date, and the woman wasn't there. So I went and got a date with this other woman and got her pregnant, and my alcoholism took off there. And so I thought, you know what? If I would have gone with the woman I originally went with, I'd have been okay. Not true. I went and did a little research. The woman that I had intended to go with that I didn't wind up going with also went with somebody who became a drunk, also got pregnant, also had two kids, also got divorced. So it didn't matter. I was going to have the experience I was going to have because I was the one driving it. That's the key. That was the important thing for me to learn is I was the one, it was my brain that was at the wheel. So anyway, so now I'm in Iowa, and it's just miserable. When I went to Iowa, I loved life. I was at the center of a lot of things going on in AA. I was having a grand time. I couldn't wait for the phone to ring. I just loved going places, working with people, talking to people. Went to Iowa. A year later, come back to Minnesota. Phone rings. I'm absolutely terrified. I don't want to go to meetings. It takes every ounce of effort that I can muster to go to a meeting. I can't stand the idea of working with another alcoholic, but I do. What's the difference? I didn't go to meetings for 6 months in Iowa. Went down, couldn't find a meeting for a couple times, got involved in the new job, got distracted. After 6 months, my wife finally took me to a meeting. But that didn't straighten me out. It wasn't a six-month break that I had. It was that spiritual disease was progressing in me over that course of that time. So I come back to Minnesota and face my next challenge. Big challenge. Came back, and I just, because I was so reluctant to go to AA and to work with people and to do all the things that I had enjoyed doing a year earlier, I realized that I was just terribly defiant. And so I'm trying to understand this whole defiance thing, and I'm talking to somebody who I'd been very close with in AA service and about this, and she'd gone out and gotten drunk and came back. She went out after 20-some years and got drunk and then came back, fortunately. And I was talking to her about it, trying to help her. And she said to me, well, you've always been defiant. It's just that you used it to do some good things. And honest to God, those words, in my mind's eye, those words were written in the heavens in glowing letters. So now, I just literally just rocked me. I wound up having to reevaluate my entire life based on how defiant I was, which was quite an experience, to say the least. I had to be able to sort out, yes, I did some good things, but I did them for the wrong reason. And I had to be able to sort that out. And then I had to find a way not to be defiant. which is worse than being defiant. How do you, with the mind, with a defiant mind, how do you develop the idea of not being defiant? It's almost impossible. So I'm reading a book one day, and the guy's talking about defiance. And he's talking about prayer. And he's saying, you have to bless people. And I'm going, oh, God. Now I got to wear one of those funny robes and all the weird jewelry when I read that. And fortunately, I'd been doing that long enough. I read, you don't do a cross or anything like that. You just try to be helpful for it. That I could do. And so I began to act differently. And so my life improved. But it took 3 to 5 years for me to get over that to where I was back enjoying a life the way I had previous to that. So that was a challenge. Then I had come back and I got involved in the IT industry just before the dot-com boom and tried to go into business for myself. That didn't work. Went to work for a company. That company got reabsorbed by its parent company. Anyway, I'm out of work. I'm out of work, and I got about 2 weeks left of my unemployment. Don't know where I'm going to get any money, pay the bills. So I'm in my basement. I've sent out 700 resumes. I got one response for a part-time job in Anoka. I live in Farmington. But I, you know what? At this point, I'm becoming a little open-minded. So I drive... I drive to Anoka thinking, you know what, if nothing else, it'll just be good practice, right? And that's really all it was. They didn't offer me the job. So now I got a week left, and I'm pacing my basement. And I can't think of anything else that I could do to get a job. I'm out of resources. I'm exactly in the same position I was when I was driving down the road in that truck when I had my spiritual experience. So I'm pacing my basement, and the thought pops into my head, God reduces to nothing that which he would use to his own purpose. Now, I thought I heard a speaker say that. Now, my buddy Roger B., who does Gopher State Tapes, and I have been doing Gopher Tapes for a long time, and we could not remember any speaker saying that. So I thought, well, I must have read it somewhere. So I go over everything that I read, everything in my library. I can't find it. So you figure out where it came from. But I'm pacing my basement, and this thought keeps coming into my head. God reduces to nothing that which he would use to his own purpose. And I try to push it out, and I try to push it out, and the damn thing just keeps coming back. So finally, I literally stop. And I say, okay, God, if that's the deal, I'm in 100%. Let's go. Nothing happened. Didn't feel any better. Day went on as, you know, it's been going. Still couldn't think of anything. Went to bed. Got up the next day. Still trying to figure it out. Phone rings. I answered the phone. This woman says, can I do a job interview with you? I said, sure. What company are you with? It was a company that I was absolutely certain I would never apply to. And I don't remember sending them a resume, either online or otherwise. But being the kind of people we are, somebody calls up and says, do you want to do a phone interview? We don't care what the job is. We'll do the interview, and I did. We get all done. I have to ask her to send me a job description because I don't know what I'm applying for. So she says, well, you know, I'll call you in a couple of days and let you know how things are going. So she called me back in a couple of days, and she said, well, you know, you really don't have the depth in areas we were looking for, but we'd like you to come in for an interview. Well, long story short, I got the job. So she calls me up to offer me the job. She asked me how much money I wanted. So I told her how much I was thinking about, and she laughed, and she said, I suppose you'd like $1 million. I said, well, if you got to lay it around, you know, I'll take it. And she told me what they were offering, which was twice what I was looking for. So I take the job, right? A day before my birthday. A day before I also ran out of unemployment. So I go to work, and, you know, we get used to things quickly. So I go to work, and I'm there 2 weeks, and now I'm starting to think, you know what? I got all this extra money. I deserve something for doing all that hard work. I'm already taking credit for something that I'm totally baffles me. So fortunately, I couldn't zero in on a particular toy. Took me a couple weeks to try to zero in on a toy. By that time, my daughter and her son had moved in with us. Took care of any extra money that we might have laying around. So there's a number of morals to that story. One is, there are things at work that we have no idea that are at work relative to us. All we have to do is be present and participate. And we have no idea where it's going. We just have to be there, and again, be willing to participate, be open-minded. So that goes on. I always have trouble figuring out which stories to tell, but so that goes on. Let's see, which one was I going to tell? There's a continuation of this story. Some years later, that daughter committed suicide on Halloween. And within a one-month period, I had two car accidents, one in which I totaled the car. My daughter committed suicide, and my wife was diagnosed with cancer. And so I'm over at my daughter's place cleaning up because she was being evicted before she committed suicide. And so I had to get everything out of there within a week, get all her affairs straightened out and all of this. And as much work as I had done on my spiritual life, things started to close in on me. That's what it felt like. Just felt like it just started to get darker and darker and darker. And so I said the prayer that I said when I was out of work. I said, God, do not let me out of this until I learn what you would have me learn. Within 5 minutes, my whole perspective on that experience changed from being dark and incomprehensible and impossible to deal with. It became hopeful. I began to see how things had been put in place so that I'd be able to deal with this prior to any of it happening. You know, one example is after I banged up the car, I borrowed Roger's van to have a car to drive. And prior to that, when I was driving my own car, I just listened to my own CD music. And I listened to the same stuff for years. So I just listened to my CD music. Well, I borrowed Roger's van, and I'm a big believer, if I get in your car, I'm not going to change the seats. I'm not changing the radio station because I don't like it when somebody does that to mine. So I'm driving Roger's van, and he listens to NPR. So I start listening to NPR. Now, you know, it's not a big deal, and yet it is, because when I was going through that with my daughter and during that difficulty, that little thing connected me to the life around me, and it was put in place before anything happened. So it's really an amazing thing, but that prayer, the folks I sponsor call the most dangerous prayer in the world, because it requires a full commitment. It's a willing to go to any lengths kind of thing, because you have to be willing, literally willing, to have the worst thing you can think of happen and participate in it willingly. And that takes a bit. That takes a bit to get yourself in that position. Roger and I were doing a workshop, and I told the story, and a guy called Roger a couple of weeks later and asked him about it. Didn't call me. And Roger said, well, you're going to have to call Denny and talk to Denny. So he called me, and he told me what his situation, and it was very much like the time I'd lost my job, right? So we went through it. I went through what I did, and he said, really? That's what you want me to do? I said, yes. And I said, but it's important for you to understand that when you say that prayer, you have to be willing to actively participate in whatever happens. You can't question it. You can't do it half-baked. You have to do it wholeheartedly, even if it's the worst thing you can think of. And you could literally hear the disappointment on the phone, and he didn't have to say a word. I mean, there was just I could feel it coming across the phone line. you know. But it's that kind of a thing, and it's that kind of a relationship that I have to have with my higher power. I have to be willing to place myself at the mercy, if you want to use those terms, of the forces that are at work. Whether you want to call it God, whether you want to call it the spirit of the universe, whether you want to call it, you know, the Native Americans call it the Great Spirit. And I think that's probably as accurate a term, a name, as works for me. But I have to have that kind of relationship with a power of my understanding. I had a sponsor early on, and he used to always say, God is I don't understand him. And I thought he was just being a smartass, you know, but now, you know, many, many years later, I finally am beginning to understand what he was trying to tell me, you know. It took a while for me to kind of get it. So it's those kinds of things, I think, that spirituality, the seeking for God, for a way of life, an understanding about life, that's what it's all about. You know, I think we all like to think that if we get the knowledge, we'll kind of have it. But it's not about knowledge, it's about understanding. And the nice thing about understanding is it's fluid. It can change at any given time. So, you know, as I go home tonight, I may be thinking about what I said or something I heard some one of you say, and it may change how I understand things. If I have knowledge, I've got it locked down. And my ego gets involved because I got to lock it down because it's my knowledge and it has to be right. I can't let you challenge it. Last Thursday, I do a big book study, which is a little different from most because its purpose is to teach people how the book came about rather than identifying what's in the book. And a fella came to that I sponsor came to it for the second time, and he and I got into an argument about something neither one of us said. We had to get together the next day to find out what the other person didn't say that we argued about. So there's some challenges that we continually have to meet here. One of the other things that, and you know, the interesting thing about this spiritual approach to things is I've been reading the big book for a long time. And yet it wasn't until a couple of years ago that I discovered the phrase, the descriptions on page 5 and page 37 in the big book about the alcoholic mind. The alcoholic mind has two qualities. One is a lack of perspective. And the other is a lack of sense of proportion. And when I think about those two things and I look at all the insanity in my life, it makes perfect sense. All of it. Every insanity in my life had those two qualities attached to it. But it took me 30-some years to read those little descriptions and to identify with them. So this is really kind of a dynamic thing. So we can't get rid of the lumber. We're going to have to hang on to the lumber. Stay away from the cults, you know. But share the common understandings. But it's an amazing thing. And I think one of the problems we have with spirituality in Alcoholics Anonymous is people are afraid of it, and it's not anything to be afraid of. I think Kristen mentioned it. I'm a firm believer in the divinity within. And the way, you know, why people call me or I work with somebody, and they're struggling with a sense of self, the thing that I suggest to them is this. Each day, just find one thing that you do automatically, one good thing that you do without thinking, that you just do, whether it's opening the door for somebody or sending somebody a card or whatever, just one nice thing that you do for somebody else that you never thought about. You just did it. And then write it down. And after a week or a month, look at that. and you'll find the divinity within. Because you'll find that you have a good part of yourself that constantly expresses itself. Not always a major force in a day, but it constantly expresses itself. And that's a good approach. I've also made the suggestion to some folks who really struggle with this. I don't know if you know those Russian nesting dolls. I have them putting them together. When they're all together, wait a couple months. Our steps say conscious contact. It doesn't say make a contact. We just need to become conscious of it. And that's part of what I'm trying to do in my spirit. And I got a new sponsor, which is his sponsor. Both their names are Bob's. But he grabs a slip off the waitress pad, and we say, wait a minute. I'm 40 years sober. He doesn't. Is that I did my four step based on the four absolutes. Based on those four things, you get away from the incidents and you start looking at attitudes. Well, I discovered that that's not being honest. She asked me a question today, and I will tell her how my day was. Interesting. So it changed our whole dynamic and relationship difference. So thanks.
Okay, everyone. Now you can have 10 to 15 minutes for a little more roundtable discussion. Glad to hear such lively discussion again. Anyone is welcome to come up to the microphone and please share anything you've been lively discussing. Anyone interested in sharing?
Thank you. Val Alcoholic. Thank you so much. All of you speakers were just fantastic. I will never look at a 2x4 the same again. I would love to know where all those scribbled boards ended up. Someone is going to be in for quite a treat when they find the writing on those boards. This has just been absolutely amazing. What a fabulous, intimate few hours I have had here. I think everyone else would agree. The food's been wonderful, the speakers have been great, and the message has been awesome. I don't know how you guys can come up here and think of this stuff and deliver it in such an eloquent way. Anyway, I didn't have anything specific. I have pages of notes over there that I'm going to be sharing and remembering, but I just wanted to really say a heartfelt thank you for all of the quality that's been here. Appreciate it.
Okay, I'll take this moment just to genuinely thank all of the presenters again. But really, the rest of the day will just be open for sharing question and answers or anything. So please feel free to come up to the microphone. I'll mention Adam's phone number. And I also got an email address of his if you want to contact him by email. And that would be to get a recording of any of the speakers from today. That would be Adam B., phone number 651-347-9703. And the email address is Adam Bailey, AdamBailey, at Outlook.com. A-train. Yes, he's also known as A-Train. So my name is Megan, and I'm an alcoholic. And I do have a question for our last speaker, Denny. That phrase, God reduces to nothing that which he uses to his own purpose. So that, did you ever find the origin of that?
No.
He said no, never found it. So it was clearly divinely inspired to you, Denny, by your higher power. Anyone want to share thoughts on the day? Any speakers, their own spirituality in particular?
Hello, my name's Melena. We got here late in time to hear you, Dennis. So I have to wonder what the other two speakers were, what was said. But it was very good to hear you and your your search through your spiritual connection, and that to me is the only thing that is asked of us, is to develop a spiritual connection, however one wishes to call it or what. I too, in my second year of sobriety, went through the search for God. I needed to have my own picture and came to the conclusion, A, I wasn't God, which was very healthy. And then, so I did all these religious readings on various, I think there's 100 and something different common religions and a number of different other belief systems, several hundred. Anyway, what came to me in all of this, and what came to me in the book, was that it's all about love. You know, L-O-V-E. God is love, and I'm a dog person. And dog spelled backward, of course, is God. And to me, that's the closest one can get to the unconditional love that God has to offer is through a dog, because it doesn't matter. That dog is happy to see you. It don't matter what goes on, you know. So anyway, it was that commonality of love, and when it talks about it in the big book, love as in positive, you know, bringing the positive with you, around you, and giving it away. And that's what service is to me, is giving it away and practicing love. So with that, I'll pass.
Thanks, Melena.
My name is Marvin. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Marvin.
Hello, everyone. Sorry I was late. I was in Lake Elmo. And I want to say thank you, Dennis. Sorry, Mitch, I missed Kristen. Sorry. But I get to work with Kristen, so I'm very much aware of her sobriety in action. So I'm not surprised that she did a great job. And Dennis, when you mentioned not being able to find the source of that saying, you know, I wrote down adversity. You know, no matter what I'm facing.
Mike.
Oh, you can't hear me? I thought about when I came to Minneapolis, 2218, as a matter of fact. And I remember asking this guy to sponsor me out in the parking lot. And I remember he gave me these papers, and he said, I want you to read these and then get back to me. And I looked at them, and the first one said, abandon everything you think you know about God. And I had to stop in my tracks, and I had to I had to basically tell him, I'm sorry, you know, right off the bat, number one, I can't do, because were it not for God, I would not be here asking you for help. So, and then he accepted me anyway, and he said, I think we can work together. And then I watched him, through adversity, demonstrate his sobriety in action. His wife was dying, and I got to see that. You know, I've never experienced anything like that, to watch somebody going through that type of adversity. As much as it hurt, you know, as much as the human wants to say, why, God, why, you know? But to live through it instead of just exist through it. I watched him dance on the dance floor with his wife. I watched that, you know, and that's why I asked him to be my sponsor, because I saw evidence of that kind of living in his life, and I wanted that. So, you know, and that made him, going through that, experiencing that with her, as hard as it might be to understand, made him an even better person. And it definitely made me a better person because of whatever allowed him to do that, to live that way under that type of adversity, and I wanted that, you know. So anyway, thank you very much.
Tom Alcoholic. I wanted to thank all the speakers and everyone who came up and for the lively discussion we had at our table. But it was interesting. I was kind of, as my sponsor would say, the gears are turning a little bit from these wonderful speakers who really brought some very interesting perspectives. But I was kind of thinking of a continuation of a theme between Mitch, Kristen, Denny, and I thought of two that seemed kind of critically, at least really stood out to me, one of which is rigidity, and that the spiritual practice really is, spiritual growth is really fluid, and our understanding and our comprehension, it's, you know, it makes sense to me that the, you know, the God that I originally came in here with that wasn't really working, I kind of was willing to change that when I got willing enough, right? And then that changed throughout sobriety, and that it's kind of a constant progression of how it changes and grows and manifests and looks different, and things that I would absolutely have not believed when in my first year of sobriety, the things I believe now. And I think it comes back, at least for me, to one, I'm not God, and two, if I'm living in God's universe, my fixed ideas are really what can cut me off to that. And I think the speakers today really shared to, you know, growing and evolving and change. And one of the things I most appreciated was talking about trying times in spirituality. And the funny one that got me from Kristen was like last Thursday, you know? And, you know, the big things sometimes are very easy for me to respond to spiritually, but sometimes it's Thursdays, you know, but everything's going wrong, and or Thursday, you know, Friday, Saturday, you know, and it's, you know, I get on a kind of a bad streak. But I did appreciate, you know, the sharing of that and the openness and the honesty. And I think that of, you know, the spiritual growth is that connection with people and that openness and that honesty and sharing from the heart is really what draws us together and draws at least me to continue to go in this, and seeing people with different levels of experience is very inspiring. The second thing I can't remember, so I will I'll sit down. All right, thank you.
Hi, I'm Jennifer. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jennifer.
So I've been here almost 19 months. Before I moved up here, I lived in a different state and got sober there and grew up there in AA, and I've been sober, was sober 11 years when I moved here. And I was very safe there in AA. My whole life was pretty much geared around AA. All my friends were pretty much AA members. I worked the steps out of the book, and I had a sponsor, and I sponsored women here and there, and I thought I knew everything about AA. And as I got ready to move up here, I started to kind of pull away because I knew that I was going to be meeting new people, and the people that I had known for 11 years were not going to be a part of my life. So I started to pull away, and I got here, the last couple of months before moving up here, I wasn't going to as many meetings or as many functions. And I mean, I still had my home group, but you know, I was pulling away in a lot of ways. And it hit me when Kristen shared, because I didn't leave AA, but when I got here, I went through some adversity, and it was very tempting to leave, and struggled with finding a sponsor that fit. And things were just tough for the first 6-7 months. And you know, all my new connections were just brand new, so I didn't know where I stood with friends, with anything, with AA. And this adversity I went through really challenged me to look at what I had been thinking was the right way to work AA. And I finally found a sponsor that fit, and we've been working together for some time. And you know, the main point is, I've learned through my experience since I've been here that I don't know. And over time, yes, that family has grown around me, and I found that AA family, and so many are here. And one of the best things that I could have done when I got here was gotten thrown into service, and got connected, like in my second week, with many people who were doing service in AA, and so that's really impacted me in a huge way. But I loved everyone sharing today, because the main thing I got out of it was that I really don't know, and all I have is my experience. If I think I have knowledge, well, that's going to go away, because I thought I knew so many things when I moved here, and over time I realized I don't know, and it's been my experience that's become more important than what I know. So with that, I'll pass.
The microphone is still open. Questions from anyone on anything? We have someone up here looking for a sponsor. A woman looking for a sponsor. May I see a show of hands who are sponsors?
We're willing to sponsor.
Oh, willing to sponsor. That's the question. Okay. Show of hands, willing to sponsor. Okay. Sandra, you got that? Last chance.
Karen, alcoholic. It was such a nice day today that I thought about doing other things, yard work and important things like that, but I'm so glad I came, because this was a game changer. This is a real game changer. Kind of chokes me up a little bit. I guess I had no idea how hungry I was for this stuff. So I'm really looking forward to listening to this message over again and again and again and giving it to my sponsees. At my table, we were talking a lot about the most dangerous prayer in the world. You know, it's pretty interesting. I mean, theoretically, why are we here? You know, we're here to grow. And yeah, that's painful sometimes. It's easier. I keep thinking it would be easier to grow when you're a kid, you know? I wish I had done that when I was an adolescent. My adolescent stuff when I actually was an adolescent, instead when I'm 70, you know? But it is what it is, like my sponsor says. No matter how much, I would like it to not be what it is. But So talking about that dangerous prayer got us to talking about the set-aside prayer, which a lot of us had heard of, but we were a little unclear about exactly how it went. So I Googled it, and, you know, isn't it amazing that everything is there? And, in fact, I also Googled your verse, and it appears like as though it might be from the Bible. Corinthians 1:28 sounds very, very much like it. Yeah, aren't smartphones are wonderful? Seems like, oh, and I just want to thank all the speakers. What a variety of experience, just the richness of the presentations. This is Gopher State quality speakers here. I'm very, very, very impressed. So thank you so much. And the food, too. The food was fabulous. Coffee, good coffee. You guys know how to party. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Write it down, Garth.
And you should have an evaluation.
Just two questions. Before absolutes, are love, honesty, purity, and unselfishness, and the hard prayer is, God, do not relieve me of this until I am able to learn whatever it is, and I am meant to learn by this, and fully participate in whatever happens according to your plans. Or what? Could you restate that negative prayer?
A little shorter flow. At God, do not relieve me of this until I learn what you would have me learn.
Thank you. I'd also like to know what the set aside prayer is. I don't know what that is.
Thanks. I say it at my old home group, which is it's called Self-Imposed Crisis, which is great, which is also out of the book. So it's, God, let me set aside everything I think I know about you and me and this program and these steps for an open mind and a new experience with you and me in this program and these steps. I sure thank you.
Thank you, Cindy. Any other prayers anybody needs to?
Well, being the alcoholic mind, what about purity?
I'm glad you asked about Linda, because it took me a little while to figure that one out. And I was reading an old sermon from the 1800s, and the sermon proposes that the word purity there is intended to mean willing to be purified, which is in essence step 6 and 7.
Any other questions? Sharing? Experience, strength, hope?